The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Kurt Benroot from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sci-Fi. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Daily Sci-Fi.
My name is Joanna LaForgia, and I will be reading The Hidden Plague by Patrick Leonard Welch. From the desk of Cornelius Jameson Eldrick III, Emeritus Wizard, Third Class. Dear Sirs and Madams, in my studies of worldly phenomena, the varieties of magical forms out there have never ceased to amaze and delight me. That is true magical phenomena, of course. What I put down here today is nothing of the sort. It has come to my attention that recently the younger generation has been enamored of this new fad magic known as science. That's right, science. Now, I know what you're thinking, my most learned colleagues. Nobody in their right mind would ever embrace such malarkey as this so-called science when there are perfectly legitimate fields of magical study out there that one can embrace in our modern world. I pray you heed my words and watch closely your students, however, as this science has become a plague on many a wizarding campus of late. What is this science all about, you may be asking yourselves? Those of you who haven't already discovered the plague on your classrooms, that is. Well, in a nutshell, science claims that there are certain structural constants within the universe that govern how things interact in the world. In fact, this pseudo-magic has a set of laws that they have given a fanciful name, calling them physics. According to these physics laws, the world is governed by such ludicrous restrictions as, quote, matter can neither be created nor destroyed, but remains constant, unquote. I ask you, my fellows, have you ever heard such drivel in your lives? Another of their blasphemous teachings implies that all matter is made up of 100 or so elements, such as carbon and tin, and not indeed merely a configuration of one or more of the four primal elements, air, earth, fire, and water. Preposterous! I'm sure, most learned colleagues, that you can agree that such heretical teachings can do nothing but hold our apprentices back from their gainful education in the mystic arts, and that the spread of these lies should be stamped out before it is too late. This being the case, I ask you, one and all, to join with me and help in the discrediting of the so-called sciences before it is too late. I look forward to hearing back from you at your earliest convenience on this matter, but do urge some haste before the seed of this virus takes hold too firmly within our august institutions of learning. Warmest regards, Cornelius Jameson Eldrick III, Emeritus Wizard, 3rd Class.
I'm Emily Chiola, and I will be reading Mindstream by Jermaine Henry. There they were again, the machines. Two this time, an adult and a child. The small one was jumping up and down with a specific frequency at a specific position. A robot's expression of excitement, apparently. I want that one! I want that one! The taller robot turned towards the kid, rigid as a stick. Why the hell was it turning like that? Every step carefully managed, every portion of its movement assessed for the correct torque and angular displacement. Just turn, damn it! It patted the plastic dome of a head with a metal hand. 1-2, pause. 1-2, pause. You have selected that particular capsule. Is this correct, son? That is correct, father. The request has been accepted. The father reached up and plucked the capsule from the shelf, setting the brain inside to tremble in the gooey fluid. "An excellent choice, sir," said the retailer from behind his counter, beaming that pompous, exaggerated smile of his. "A human serving a machine. What a world. That one is from a commercial pilot veteran. Think of all the wonders of the world that man has seen, yes? An aeroplane is a powered vehicle with fixed wings engineered for flight." The retailer chuckled. Forced, of course. Yes, indeed it is. You have a very clever young man, sir. I like aeroplanes. The young robot swiveled its eye cameras up to its father. Please purchase the item, father. The older robot inspected the microchips that were plugged into the brain, the number of optical and HDMI ports wired to the spinal cord, the screen connected to the cortex. I will purchase the item. Very good, sir. The retailer pressed some virtual buttons on his holographic tablet. This one won't disappoint you, sir, I can guarantee that. A full bidirectional field for superb high-definition spintronic devices easily supported. Those dream movies will play smoothly on your entertainment system, sir, very smoothly. Let me just get this packaged up for you. He took the biotainment pod and speeded towards the doors of the storeroom. Omnidirectional. The retailer stopped and glared at the janitor, who was sweeping the floor near the twin doors. A pardon? It's an omnidirectional quantum field, not a bidirectional one. The janitor bent down on creaking knees to sweep up the dirt into his pan. The retailer looked down his nose at him. And what do you know about it? I know a good deal about it, lad. I was part of the team that designed those bloody things. The retailer raised a cynical eyebrow. I suppose you designed the wheel as well, he said. He then pushed through the doors and let the breeze to scatter the janitor's well-managed dirt replies. Damn, youngsters have no respect anymore. The janitor looked at the machines and squeezed his hands hard around his broom handle. They were waiting. No, not aimlessly wandering about the store waiting or conversing while waiting. Just stood there like statues and waited. Not even breathing. The janitor returned to his work, and for the upteenth time swept the dirt back into their manageable piles.
I'm Kurt Benrood, and this story is Summer Reading by Ken Liu. On this summer day, with the air still cool after a thunder shower, with sunlight slanting through the cracks in the roof and the walls of the library, dappling the floor strewn with vines and leaves, CN-344-315 made his daily rounds. The robot docent muttered to himself as he dragged his squat, filing cabinet-sized body through the rubble. He turned his cubicle head from side to side, expressionlessly surveying his domain. He had last seen a visitor to the library over 5,000 years ago, but he wasn't about to change his routine now. After mankind had scattered to the stars like dandelion seeds, Earth was maintained as a museum overseen by robot curators. At first, new generations born in the far-flung colonies made pilgrimages to visit the cradle of civilization, to marvel at the Great Pyramids, really holographic recreations, the Chrysler Building, plastinated against any further erosion, the Forbidden City, complete with the Starbucks logo, a late addition, the Space Elevator of Singapore, still featuring the quaint sign, "Please use the restroom before boarding," and other cultural attractions. But over 100 millennia, the flow of tourists slowed to a trickle, then a drip, and finally stopped. CN-344-315 passed rows and rows of empty racks that age and rust had turned into delicate filigree, as fragile and brittle as glass. Climbing vines draped over them, creating bowers whose shade provided homes for mushrooms, ferns, wildflowers, and the occasional hare. The robot seemed to see in them ghosts of the mighty servers that once preserved yottabytes of the human race's accumulated knowledge. "You cannot take them," CN-344-315 had shouted at the Council of Curators. "The data on them..." "Can no longer be read," the head curator had answered. "You have used up so much of our resources trying to keep them going, but these machines weren't designed to last. Whatever information humans found useful, they copied it onto their ships and took it away. Data only lives when it is constantly copied. What is left here is just digital detritus, bit rot, worthless. What is thought useless in one era may be treasured in another." But the servers, having rusted into useless hunks of metal, had been recycled, and CN-344-315 had grieved for all the data that had no copies in the universe. Digitized words, images, sounds that dissipated forever into the void. The old robot continued to trundle down the well-worn path between the empty racks. The noise of grinding gears and antiquated treads like wheezing breath. On the 10th floor of the library is a tiny room about 10 meters square. CN-344-315's joy was to enter this room at the end of a day. He would survey his collection, nestled on the shelves like rows of sleeping babies. He would extend a probe from his chassis through a slot in the airtight glass panes covering the shelves, so that the chemical detectors on the probe could process the fragrance of ancient paper and ink. The resulting electric patterns in his brain were pleasurable. Then he would relax his motors and actuators, his pinchers and wheels, and be as still as a piece of furniture. When the library was built, people had already stopped using books. The few hundred books that were left in the world were kept in this small room as a kind of shrine of relics. Not unlike the Earth itself now is kept as a memento for all of humanity, CN-344-315 reflected. Gears grinding with weariness, he pulled open the door to the room and ground to a halt at the sight within. "Hello," the small child said. She wore a yellow dress, like a ray of sunlight in the gloom of the ruins of the library. She stared at CN-344-315 with large dark eyes, as limpid as the first rain of fall. Her hands were placed against the glass covering the shelves, as though CN-344-315 had found her peering into an aquarium. She was about 7, CN-344-315 guessed, dredging up ancient routines for interacting with visitors that hadn't been accessed for 5,000 years. "Hello," CN-344-315 said. He had to reach up with his manipulators to dislodge the voice box, rusty from disuse. "Welcome to the library." "What are these?" "Books," CN-344-315 said. He thought about how to explain them. "Very old, ancient data, preserved at ultra-low density." Even a decent-sized book held only a few thousand kilobits of data. CN344315 had calculated that to store even a tiny fraction of the data once held on the servers in the library would have required a stack of books that reached to the moon. The girl examined the spines of the books. Her eyes suddenly lit up. "Can I see that one?" Unlike the other spines, which consisted of small letters against solid, dull backgrounds, the one she pointed at was bright yellow, just like her dress. CN344315 thought about the grease on her fingers, about the moisture in her warm breath, about rough, unsteady little hands against paper that had lasted 1,000 centuries. The robot shuddered. Because CN344315 had been unable to save the servers, he poured all his energy into the preservation of the books. And they were hard to preserve. The dead wooden fibers that made up the pages were subject to decay and tempted insects. The ink faded when exposed to direct sunlight and moisture. The glue and thread in the binding became brittle and fell apart with the passage of time. CN344315 had to devise special cases, sealants, control every aspect of the environment inside the room, temperature, light, humidity, vibrations. The girl looked at the robot expectantly. CN344315 wanted to say no. Though the books were so much trouble to keep alive, to maintain against decay, this only made him care more for them. In this, CN344315 was simply learning the lesson that every parent knew. It is the effort given to protect and nourish the helpless that binds you to them with love, tighter and tighter. Each time that he had to rush to reinforce the small room against an oncoming storm, each time he had to labor to eliminate a fungal or entomological threat, each time he sat patiently and examined each page of 100 books for signs of damage, he came to love them more. But even with all his ceaseless struggles, the laws of entropy held sway, and every century books were lost to rain, animals, plain age. He grieved the passing of each one as deeply as his circuits allowed. "Please," the little girl said, "there's nothing to do here. None of the machines work." It was true, CN344315 knew. The servers that had taken up most of the space in the library were, of course, gone. The shelves of disks and cubes that had once fit the viewing kiosks downstairs no longer worked either. They were so fragile that even the smallest bit of damage, a slight warping caused by a change in temperature or a minuscule scratch, rendered the data on them inaccessible. The storage devices were designed to be thrown away. As the council had said, data only lives when it is constantly copied, and humans did not seem to care to preserve the medium that data lived on. But the books, even when the pages were torn or faded, dog-eared or written over, could still be read. Wanted to be read? All right, CN344315 said, surprising even himself. He creaked over to the shelf, unlocked the sealed glass doors, and gingerly took out the book. CN344315 placed the volume gently on the small desk at the center of the room. The girl climbed onto the chair next to it. Together, the robot and the young girl examined the book. The hardcover showed a vivid drawing of a smiling tortoise with pink leg warmers and a matching pink hair bow. She was getting ready to start a road race against a cat, wearing headphones and a look of determination, and a dog snarling to show his sharp teeth. "Oh," she said. She placed her fingers against the letters on the cover, her little voice trying to hide her disappointment. "I don't know how to read this." "It is written in archaic English," CN344315 said, "one of the ancestors of the language we all speak now. Let me translate and read it to you. The Adventures of Sophia, the Fastest Tortoise in Suburbia." For 10 minutes, they were not sitting in a decaying library on an ancient, forgotten planet. For 10 minutes, they were in a place, at a time, when talking tortoises and caterpillars who tossed salads made sense. For 10 minutes, they were not an old robot and a young girl, but readers communicating with an author across an ocean of 100,000 years. An entire world rose, grew, and blossomed around them as they read. The robot turned to the last page. The end. They were silent for a while. "I liked that," the little girl said. "It wasn't like a sim, but it was better than a sim. I couldn't touch anything, but I could feel everything in my head. If I close my eyes, I can still see Sophia. I think she's having more adventures. We'll be great friends." The old robot smiled. He didn't have the right words for the electrical patterns in his brain at this moment.
"Read it again."
CN-344-315 turned the book back to the first page. "Aaron," a man's voice called. The robot and the girl looked up.
"Mom! Dad!"
Aaron leapt off the chair and ran over to the door where a man and woman were standing. "We've been looking all over for you," the woman said. "We told you not to wander off by yourself. Good thing our tracking beacon still works in this primitive dump."
"I think dump is a bit strong," the man began.
"This is the last time you pick where we go for vacation. We could have had all the culture we wanted through a sim back home. Now let's get back to our ship and go somewhere civilized."
CN-344-315 stayed out of their way. He knew that for some visitors, the past was simply the past, as alien and as irrelevant as a planet on the other side of the galaxy. Aaron lingered at the door of the small room.
"I had fun here," she said to CN-344-315.
"Me too," CN-344-315 said.
The girl looked longingly at the other books on the shelves around the room as her parents turned to leave.
"Wait," CN-344-315 said.
He picked up The Adventures of Sophia, the Fastest Tortoise in Suburbia, and handed it to Aaron.
"Thank you."
She clutched it to her chest tightly and beamed. CN-344-315 knew the book would not last. The child's hands were rough. She might leave it out in the rain, might spill juice on it, might tear its ancient pages out of carelessness. She might tire of the book and lose it like a cheap toy. Yet CN-344-315 had no regrets as he handed the book to Aaron. The council was right about one thing. Books are only alive when they're read. For books are seeds, and they grow in minds.
"Goodbye," the old robot said, and watched as the little girl walked away with her book.
He remained where he was as the ruined library fell into silence, and the summer birds began to chitter again.
I'm Joanna LaForgia, and this is Halfway by Michael Adam Robson. First contact came without any warning and wasn't what we expected. Obligingly, they appeared in our image, magnified into angelic beings of light. "This will be our last meeting," they said. "It's important that your history unfolds as it's supposed to." "Last meeting?" we asked. "Have you been here before? Where did you come from?" That was the strange part. They hadn't come from another world. They'd built a bridge from an entirely different universe. "We're old friends from far away," they said. "You just don't know it yet." "Always good to make a friend," we said, confused but relieved. "What is it you want?" As it turned out, they didn't want anything. They'd come to give us something. "We want to pass on knowledge that's been passed on to us. A way to meet so we can keep our friendship alive. We're happy to stay in contact, we said. But you said this was our last meeting? We didn't understand then, and they didn't explain. Like us, they had a sense of humor. The last for us, they said, but not for you. You just need to meet us halfway. Second contact came 100 years later, when we'd learned enough to build a bridge of our own to a lower layer of space. As it turned out, they had built a bridge upward to the same layer and were waiting for us in their true strange forms. We meet again, we said. Old friends, they agreed. By then, of course, the implications of the alien science were clear. The laws of their universe were very different from ours. That's why our first contact was your last, we said. Time runs backward in your world. Our future is your past. Your future is our past. This is a special time, they said. Right now is the only time we'll be able to meet like this, as equals. Third contact took another 100 years, and it was the last contact. By then, we knew how to make the bridge all the way to their universe, their native space and time. So as not to startle them, we decided to appear in their image. It's good to see you again, we said sadly. As our civilization went forward, theirs would go backward until it disappeared. This was the last time we would be able to meet. What do you want? They asked. Of course, we didn't want anything. We'd come to give them a gift. We only want to share some knowledge, we said, a way to keep in touch. Who are you? They asked. Where did you come from? They didn't know us yet, and we didn't want to spoil the surprise. We're old friends, was all we said. Or we will be. You just need to meet us halfway.
We've run out of time for today's episode of Sci-Fi. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Kurt Benrud, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sci-Fi is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.